The Bama Beat Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order at Zaxby's.com/podcast. That's Zaxby's.com/podcast. And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. This is your host, Clint Lamb, once again sitting here with Brett Hudson. How are you doing this morning, Brett?
I'm good, man. I have a very important update.
What is that update?
Yeah, so we asked for feedback at the end of the last episode of the Bama Beat Podcast, or the last one that we did together. I know there have been some posted
if
since.
If it's bad, don't tell me.
No, it's fine.
Perfect.
It's fine, yeah. So we asked for feedback because we went longer than we normally do in that episode for a multitude of reasons. One, because Clint and I just can't stop. That's the only one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good reason, though.
Yeah. Anyway, so we asked for feedback, and I can't say I was overwhelmed with feedback, but it was literally 100% positive.
Awesome.
So I'd like to be the first to welcome the listener to the first 3-hour edition of the Bama Beat Podcast. Welcome. Your podcast platform of choice is lying to you. It probably says 40 or whatever minutes this ends up being. It's actually 3 hours.
Yeah, I got to start texting some people and clearing out the schedule. I was not aware, just like you guys weren't. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to have a lot to talk about today, that's for sure.
No kidding.
I'm glad we kind of set out a little bit of time. So Alabama LSU, game of the century. What did you think about it?
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Honestly. Like, I was scared to death. I put this in the Alabama Rewind. I was scared to death in halftime that this game was going to fall short of expectation. Like, when LSU was up, what, like 33-13, right?
Yeah, 20 points, yeah.
I thought that it was going to be at about that arm's length for the rest of this game, and it would be a dud. It would fall flat, and it didn't. It was an incredibly exciting fourth quarter. Najee Harris was awesome. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was awesome. Joe Burrow was awesome. Joe Brady was awesome. Xavier McKinney was awesome. So many players on that field were awesome. And I realize I'm probably triggering Alabama fans at complimenting the quality of a game in which they lost, but that's how I viewed it. It was an awesome football game, even if Bama's mistakes did kind of mar it to a certain degree. Not too much to discredit the excellency that LSU was, but I still thought it was a very entertaining, fun football game.
Absolutely. And I mean, yeah, I don't think there should be any sort of criticism for that. It lived up to expectations. It just, Alabama's side of things, they ended up on the losing side, and that happens sometimes, very rarely. It's really interesting. I was listening to Jocks on the way down here. It's really one of the only times I ever get to listen to Jocks is when I'm coming from Birmingham to Tuscaloosa to record the Bama Beat Podcast for you guys. But Marty Smith was on there. And I'll pull up the quote, and I probably didn't get this exactly right. No, I was not texting and driving. I was sitting in a drive-thru when this was said, and I decided to kind of capture it. But
that's just for you, Clint's mom.
Yeah.
That's just for you.
You're absolutely right. For whatever reason, she listened to this podcast, and she heard that I was texting and driving. We'd have a big problem. Tweeting and driving, totally different thing. but Marty Smith was talking about Nick Saban back in 2017 when he had to go to and plead a case on College Game Day for Alabama. And him and Marty were apparently talking behind the scenes, and he said, Nick Saban, this quote-unquote, "The hardest thing about this job is trying to convince 18- to 20-year-old kids who only know winning that they can lose if they're not prepared." And that hit home for me because you have to think from when I was 18 to 20 years old, I didn't even – I mean – there was so much.
You're bulletproof.
Absolutely. That's what it feels like.
Especially when you're that talented and that famous.
It almost...
You're bulletproof.
It gets to a point where you kind of just feel like you can show up. And you win on paper every single week. And so, therefore, you just assume you're going to win on the field every single week. And that's not the way it works. I wonder, and I had this kind of quick question for you. A lot of people, myself included, I'll be the first to admit I'm a part of this. There, you know, some things have to happen in Alabama's favor, but it doesn't seem like they're certainly not out of it. And a lot of people are assuming they'll be the number four team right here out the gate before any more games have been played. Do you think that hurts Alabama, considering, you know, you lose a game that you really, you know, some self-inflicted stuff. It was a close game. You could have won it. And for most teams, that means you're out of the playoff race. And not only is Alabama not necessarily out of it, they're kind of the assumed favorite to land that last spot. What do you think about it?
I think this is an interesting test for this year's committee and that quote-unquote game control that Jeff Long mentioned a couple times back when he was the chair of the selection committee. It's interesting in this case because, again, Bama was down 20 at half and they had to surge to come back. And the same in Oklahoma's loss to Kansas State. Kansas State was just low-key holding them down and punching them in the nose
right.
for two quarters. And then Oklahoma kind of surged late in the fourth quarter and gave themselves an opportunity to win that game. So the game control aspect of it does kind of come under test with both of those losses. If the committee is willing to give credit to teams for staging the fourth quarter comeback, or if they're going to knock those teams for spending three quarters, or in Bama's case, two quarters, getting their heads beat in.
Right.
That's an interesting aspect of this. So while we're on the grander topic of the college football playoff scenario, and I wrote about 1,000 words on this. I've lined out about everything I possibly could, so go to tysports.com to find it, or my Twitter feed at Brett_Hudson. But the one thing that I did not touch on that has been bandied about since then, and by the way, most of the things I touched on are the things we touched on in the last episode when we were talking about conference champions and quality wins and lack thereof and all that. The one thing that I did not touch on was Georgia. There's been a lot of talk about how Georgia factors into this. And I've come to the conclusion that I don't live in a world in which Georgia can win the SEC championship game.
Right.
I don't live on that planet. Like, if this were Rick and Morty, I don't have the little clicker that goes to the through the green portal to the dimension in which Georgia is physically capable of beating LSU. Like, if Joe Brady is alive, literally alive, on December 7th, LSU is going to beat Georgia, in my mind. That's just how that works. Right. Georgia doesn't play offense in 2019. Good luck with that. So, I haven't really wrapped my mind around the Georgia thing just because I think that's a little too presumptuous for me. But everything else goes back to what we were talking about either last week or the week before with conference champions and how many of them are set up pretty well to either go 13-0 and win their conference or go 12-1 and win their conference and have more quality wins than Alabama does.
Right.
So I just think there's a lot out there that has to happen for Bama. Like you said, I don't think they're out of it, but there are more things that have to happen for Bama now than they probably needed to happen in the past. I think that's fair to say, just because, again, the last two times when Bama got put in, well, not necessarily Bama, but when Ohio State got bumped out of the playoff the last two times, it's because they took a 30-point loss to Purdue or Iowa or did something stupid like that. And I think, barring that, Bama needs more help now than they have in the past.
Right. And I agree with that. You know, I've kind of laid out some scenarios. Granted, you start looking, jumping down this rabbit hole, and you start realizing just how many different things can happen.
Yeah.
But some of the things that I believe can happen and probably will happen, that I think that Alabama fans, if you're kind of wondering who you need to be pulling for over the next few weeks once it gets to conference championships, I'm sure I won't be the only person to talk about this. I do think Alabama fans need to be big Ohio State fans right now. You need to make sure that Penn State's got that second loss. And if they play Minnesota in the Big Ten championship, which all signs are pointing that they're going to,
yeah,
they need to boat race Minnesota. Because what that does is Ohio State's already in. They're one of the three teams. If they boat race Minnesota, that makes them look terrible. You have a one-loss non-conference championship winner, so runner-up, right?
Yes.
I think Alabama gets in over them.
I think Alabama's over Minnesota as well.
And then, of course,
although Oklahoma, we'll get a good taste of that in the upcoming playoff rankings, which we're recording this Tuesday morning. So
right,
it's possible by the time you've listened to this that they're out. We'll get a pretty good taste of where the committee sees Bama and Minnesota Tuesday night.
I will be very interested with Minnesota and Baylor, because Baylor's just – they've skated by.
I think the Big 12 is more important than the Big 10 for Bama.
Agreed. Now, granted, if Minnesota wins the Big 12, the Big 10, then Minnesota's obviously going to the playoff. But then yes. Ohio State's a one-loss runner-up. I think that could potentially go over Alabama.
Yes.
I think the committee would be a lot more okay with that than putting in one-loss Minnesota, especially if they get boat raced.
I think so as well.
But the Big 12, certainly. And what I think needs to happen in the Big 12, and this is my – I want to get your thoughts. I think Baylor and Oklahoma need to split. But I think Baylor's win needs to come this weekend.
Absolutely.
Because that makes Oklahoma a two-loss Big 12 champion.
That's exactly what needs to happen.
Yeah, so that is extremely important.
And it's actually possible because the game is in Waco, right?
Right, absolutely.
It would very much behoove Bama for Baylor to win the game in Waco but lose the rematch in Jerry World. They still have the conference title game in Jerry World, right?
Yes, I believe so.
It would very much behoove Bama for that to be the exact case.
Yes, so that is something that needs to play out there.
You would also stand to benefit from whoever ends up winning the Pac-12 title game taking another loss, but absolutely. I don't see Oregon or Utah taking another loss. I mean, I haven't.
I actually have it right here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've really dove into this. Oregon's got Arizona, Arizona State, and Oregon State. And
at best, they'll be threatened by Arizona State, I think.
Yeah, and Oregon State's a little bit better, but I agree. I don't think they can hang with Oregon. And then Utah has UCLA, Arizona, and Colorado. Colorado's their best chance, in my opinion. Maybe it's tough. UCLA, maybe.
UCLA feels like the kind of flawed team that has beaten flawed teams.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. But I just don't see that happening.
I don't either.
So I think the Pac-12, that's why I think they're going to end up being the biggest threat to Alabama. Now, here's the thing. There's a couple of arguments with the Pac-12 that I think can go both ways. A, if it ends up being Utah that wins the Pac-12, you can make the argument Alabama loses by 5 points to number one, LSU, excuse me, or number two, depending on the committee looks at it. Utah loses to USC, who have been a very mediocre team this year. So I think that your loss is much better. Your wins, I don't think that Utah has a lot of just outstanding wins when I was looking at their schedule.
That's
the win in the Pac-12 championship.
That's the problem with the conversation is for so long, the AP poll, which used to be a third of the AP poll used to be a third of the BCS?
Yes.
The AP poll was decided by quality of loss.
Right.
The College Football Playoff Committee has shown zero tendency toward that, except when you get beat by 31 by Purdue. Hello, Ohio State. Hi, Urban. Yes. Looking at you.
Yeah.
Unless you get beat by 31 by Iowa. Again, looking at you, Urban. What's up? That's when they'll look at your loss. But if that's not your loss, they're going to look at your wins more than your loss. And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I
think it's a good thing.
It might not be for Bama's case.
It might not be for Bama's case, but for overall, it was a good thing. Because this bothered me even when we were doing this with the AP poll. When you look at a team's loss, especially when they're 11-1 or 12-1, right? That's 8% of the season. What are we doing here?
Right.
We're judging teams based on 8% of their season. What are we doing?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
It doesn't really make sense to me.
Well, and I think that, you know, the human element of the committee is what I find very interesting because, and I'm not trying to get into conspiracy theories here, and if people that talk about Bama biased, to some degree, I agree with that. Now, granted, they have analytical things that they look at, but there's a human element to the committee. And when you're talking about a one-loss Minnesota or a one-loss Baylor, and then you look at Alabama, what's going to draw a better viewership? I mean, it's kind of like when LeBron and the Los Angeles Lakers didn't make the playoffs last year. Everybody's like, this is not even – like, the viewership was down. Everybody's like – I mean, it's just not as much fun when LeBron's not – especially when he's with the Lakers, one of the biggest market teams in the NBA. So I think that could potentially play in Alabama's favor. You just don't know how much. Plus, if you look and you watch these teams, how can you watch that game between Alabama and LSU, especially with the early self-inflicted – LSU did a lot to deserve to win that game. This is not excuses. But they – did not do a lot to deserve to be up 20 points. Alabama handed them a few things that created that sort of gap. The fumble from Tua Tagovailoa, the botched snap by Ty Perrine. There was several things. Now, granted, like I said, I think that LSU proved they were the better team. I just don't think they were at any point in that game 20 points better than Bama. I think it was a lot of self-inflicted stuff. So how could, and with the way that things turned out in the second half, how can you watch that game and not tell yourself that Alabama's one of the top four teams in the country?
It goes back to the game control thing.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be interesting, because we'll find out about that, if I'm not mistaken, tonight. They'll be talking about that, right?
I mean, I would assume so.
Because that's going to matter a lot.
I hope it comes up on the teleconference that that Rob Mullins, the current chair of the committee, he's Oregon's athletic director. I hope it comes up.
Right.
And if I just might straight up ask it if I'm given that opportunity.
Yeah.
Just because it's interesting.
It's important.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a crucial factor that, you know, and I think sometimes the committee and they don't really have to be, but transparency is key in all this. But I'll say this. I wanted to get your thoughts, because you talk about Utah, and that's really the only argument that Alabama would have over Utah, is the quality of their loss is in a different hemisphere than Utah. But if Oregon wins and Alabama is able to go to Jordan-Hare Stadium and beat Auburn, an Auburn team that beat Oregon at the beginning of the season at a neutral site, that is a common denominator that you can point to quote unquote say you're better, right? So you would think from Alabama's perspective, you, even though Oregon is the bigger name and the committee, you might look at them and say, I think they would threaten Alabama more. Maybe having that common denominator like Auburn between the two can be potentially a tipping point.
I mean, common opponent is in the protocol.
Right.
So it's there.
Yeah. And especially if Alabama boat races Auburn, which I do not foresee, by the way. I think that's going to be, I think Georgia's certainly got their hands full. I think what they do well plays right into what Auburn does well defensively. And I just, the only reason I think Georgia's going to win that game is because I don't think Auburn's offense can do anything to threaten Georgia's defense. But as far as
that Georgia, game is going to be 12-3, and I'm going to hate it.
Yeah, it's going to be the polar opposite of what we saw this past.
Have I made it clear that I hate Georgia this year? Have I made that clear?
Are you sticking that flag in
that
the ground?
That team is disgusting.
They're not fun to watch.
I hate them.
Yeah, with the way that college football has kind of evolved, they've stayed 2010, 2011.
I hate it.
And you know, it's won them some games, to be fair, but I don't think it's
because they're more talented than almost everybody else.
I don't think that they could handle an LSU style offense or an Alabama style offense.
Bro, that offense scored 17 at home in double overtime against Will freaking Muschamp. This is done. This is over. This offense is done. This conversation is done. Get Georgia out of my face. I'm done.
Agreed. And there are a lot of people that sit here, you know, the what if Georgia wins the SEC championship. I don't see that at all.
Again, I don't live on that planet.
Yeah, I definitely don't either. So we've kind of covered the Pac-12, the Big 12, the Big 10. Obviously, Clemson's winning the ACC. They're getting
in. What's the ACC? Are there other teams in that league?
Yeah, right? I mean, at a certain point.
Really? Are there other teams in the ACC
that I'm unaware of? Cecil brought up something last week, and it stands true. Would Auburn go undefeated with Clemson's schedule?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Alabama.
They already beat A&M, didn't they?
Absolutely. And they beat A&M, I think, by more. Maybe not, but it doesn't matter. Clemson played them at home. Auburn
went to College Station, I'm pretty sure.
But the point being is, when you look at that schedule, I completely agree with Cecil. Auburn is a three, potentially four loss team in the SEC, and they go undefeated with Clemson's schedule. So if you can't look at that from a logical standpoint and understand, I mean, anybody that's criticizing Clemson's schedule, you can criticize Alabama's too, but it is better than Clemson's, certainly.
Yes.
It's especially now that we've hit the point where they've played the LSUs, they're getting ready to play the Auburns. It's, you know, night and day different. I just thought that was interesting. So Alabama fans certainly need to be pulling, in my opinion, for LSU to win out.
That won't be that hard.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Arkansas, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and then Georgia in the SEC title game.
A lot of people.
Does Georgia win any of those games by fewer than 14 points?
Which games?
Any of them. A&M, Ole Miss, Arkansas, Georgia. Does LSU win any of them by fewer than 14 points?
No. No, absolutely not.
Again, I hate Georgia. Yeah. So, no.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think that with as limited as Georgia's offense is, they're not going to be able to do a fraction of what Alabama's offense was able to do against LSU's defense, which is, I think both these defenses are getting unfair shakes to some degree. Now, granted, Alabama was exposed in a lot of ways defensively, but they're not an Oklahoma defense. They're not a outside the top 100. It's going to get boat raced, you know, allowing, you know, 40 plus points to every opponent they play, regardless who it is.
Let's see what they're at in defense at the moment.
Yeah, that actually would be, I'd be very interested to see it, because I want to say that they were.
Do you want to guess what LSU's national ranking is in yards per play allowed?
Oh, you're allowed.
Allowed. But that's what we're talking about, right?
Well, no.
LSU's defense?
Well, I was talking about Alabama's defense.
Alabama's defense, excuse me. Okay.
I was definitely talking
about. All right. Do you want to guess what Alabama's yards per play? Yards per play allowed, national rank, and yards per play allowed?
Oof. 60. My
20th.
Oh, wow.
20th. 20th in the nation in yards per play allowed. I'm double checking to make sure I have that right, but
it makes sense.
Yeah, 20th in yards per play allowed. And LSU is 27th.
Interesting. Well, certainly LSU exposed a lot of Alabama's deficiencies on defense.
60th is Old Dominion, by the way. Shouts to the Monarchs.
Really?
Yeah.
I was just going, yeah. I was like, well, you can't really go wrong. I can't be too high or too low when you just split the gap between how many teams are in college football.
True, yeah.
I can't be too far off the mark at True. That point. That was the strategy there, by the way.
They did allow 7 yards per play against LSU, though, so that's yeah, what sticks in the brain.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, defensively, LSU, or not defensively, but for Alabama, they allowed LSU to go 8 for 15 on third down. So that was the most frustrating part. And granted, from LSU's defense, from their perspective, Tua Tagovailoa on third and long was money. I'm talking, there was several, even, you know, backed up in their, yep. you know, own side of the field.
Wasn't there like a 3rd and 22 at some point
third
that they
19,
hit?
I believe.
I've got the game broadcast right here. Hang on, yeah, give me 5 seconds. 3rd and 19.
That guy, and they converted.
3rd and 19 in the fourth quarter. He hit Ruggs for 26.
Yeah, it was a huge play.
Also hit a 3rd and 13 and two 3rd and 10s.
Yeah, I mean, he was money on 3rd and long. They were all, and this, here's the thing. You saw what, and before we start jumping into that, just want to finish up the college football plays, and then we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back and discuss a little bit more Alabama LSU, because I really want to dive into some of this stuff. Do you think, I've seen a lot of people talking, Alabama fans really need to be pulling for Auburn to beat Georgia this weekend. I don't think they have to.
Again, I don't live in a world in which Georgia can beat LSU.
Right. Well, but
so it doesn't matter if Georgia beats Auburn, because they're going to lose in the SEC championship game. Then they are a 2-loss non-champion, yes. Whereas Bama is a 1-loss non-champion.
Yes. Now, the reason that people are saying that is to make Auburn's a better opponent. So when Alabama beats them, because that's going to be their best victory, a 4-loss Auburn compared to a 3-loss Auburn. So they're saying that if Auburn's a 4-loss team, that's your best win of the year. That's really bad. I don't necessarily think that it matters that much.
So here's what it comes down to. Is the difference between Auburn beating Georgia but losing to Bama and Auburn losing to Georgia and losing to Bama, is that extra loss enough to bump Auburn out of the committee's top 25?
I don't think so.
That's the question you have to answer for yourself. If you don't think so, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because Auburn's going to be in the top 25 at the very end, and that's a top 25 win. Yippee-ki-yay.
Now, granted,
if that is enough to knock them out of the committee's top 25, then that is valuable. Because at that point, Bama would only...
They'd have zero.
Yeah, they'd have zero because Texas A&M isn't in there right now. And then they're playing Georgia and LSU at the end of the year, so they're not going to get back into it.
Right.
So that's the question you have to answer for yourself. If you think those... If you think the extra loss to Georgia would bump Auburn out of the top 25, then yes, you need to root for Auburn against Georgia. If you don't think that, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And I
don't know the answer to that question, by the way. I'm just posing the... I'm telling the fans what to think and kind of go
so
through.
So who would their law... There would be the Alabama, Georgia, Florida...
And Oregon. No, they beat Oregon.
Who is their...
Who is the fourth loss? LSU? Bama, LSU, Georgia, Florida?
Florida.
Yeah.
Georgia, Florida, LSU, Bama.
So yeah.
All of the four you know, top 13, 12 teams.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't think that that's going to hurt them all that much. Now, granted,
especially when you look at the bottom of the top 25 right now, as the AAC eventually cannibalizes itself, and the Memphises and SMUs and Cincinnati's of the world, they eventually meet each other, be it late in the regular season, Navy as well, late in the regular season or in the AAC title game. Some of those teams are going to drop out. You're creating spots for yourself, and then teams like Texas A&M are going to take losses to Georgia and LSU, and they're not going to be in the conversation anymore. So, yeah, that's more or less what it comes down to. There's room for Auburn. What's the point of all that?
Yeah, I do think that a three-loss Auburn is probably a top 15 team, compared to a four-loss Auburn is going to be at the absolute best late teens. My guess would be early, you know, 20s. So, does that matter? Barely being in the top 25 and that's your only quality win, or being a top 15 team, you know, 15 or 16 team. Does that, I mean, all this stuff, we can sit here and analyze as much as we want. We have no idea what the committee's looking for. Would it help Alabama if Auburn beat Georgia? Sure. It's not going to hurt them in any way, but I don't think.
Yeah,
if Alabama
that's a good
fans
way to put it.
Are wondering, oh, do I really have to pull for Auburn this weekend? I don't necessarily think so, if you don't want to.
That's a good way to put it. It might not help you. We don't know the answer to that, but it's not going to hurt.
Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, pull for Auburn if you want
you
to.
Can if you want.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I'm indifferent to it.
Again, just don't bet on Georgia in the SEC championship game.
Yeah. Whatever the
Because I told you not to. Out of my hatred. Just do it for my hatred alone.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be actually talking more about the Alabama-LSU game. So stay tuned for that. This has been the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's. And welcome back into the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's.
We talked about Georgia and the break, and I'm really mad again.
Yeah,
I need you to bring me down.
Yeah, well, I mean, good thing you're feeling probably how a lot of Alabama fans were feeling following Saturday's loss to LSU. Nice little segue there.
Thank you.
And rightfully so. There was a lot of frustrating aspects to that game for Alabama fans. You're talking about, we've already talked about the miscues on offense in the first half and special teams. Talking about the fact that Alabama's defense could not get a stop, could not get off the field on third downs.
The 25 missed tackles stat from Saban's press conference on Monday, I don't know that my Twitter account is ever going to be the same.
Yeah.
The takes that have been launched at my handle over the last 24 hours make me want to throw my laptop in a lake.
Absolutely. And at one point, and I'm trying to find it, late in the game, Alabama scored and pulled it within one score. And this was early in the fourth quarter because I was still up in the press box. And I immediately, it was my first thought, and I immediately tweeted it out. At this point, Alabama fans should not be feeling comfortable with this LSU passing game and Joe Burrow with where things were at.
I found the point in the game. Joe Burrow and co. go on a 12-play, 75-yard touchdown drive.
Right there late in the game.
That takes 4 minutes and 26 seconds.
Yep.
And they moved the chains on third down three times
drive. Most frustrating drive for someone that loves defense like I do.
A third and three at midfield, a third and 10 on the 36, and a third and five on the 20.
Right. And yeah, I was sitting next to you, but I think it might have been you that I said it to on that QB draw on third and what was it, six maybe?
Yeah, third and five at the 20. Joe Burrow run for 15 yards and a first down.
Yeah, it was a QB draw. And as soon as they sent Edwards-Helaire, split him out wide, and they made it five wide, empty backfield, I'm like, this QB draw, it's safe. It's a run play. You get to run clock, which they were trying to do.
Yep.
And it's something Alabama had not been able to stop it up to that point. So, and the fact that Alabama was completely blindsided, that's the part. I personally think that Pete Golding is getting way too much criticism for his performance as the defense coordinator this season.
I do too.
Granted, things like that, not seeing that coming, to me that was one of the easiest calls in the entire game.
Joe Brady was a step ahead of Pete Golding the entire game.
And
that doesn't mean Pete Golding is bad. That doesn't mean he needs to be fired. Joe Brady is really good at this, guys.
Yes, very
good. This is going to happen on occasion. And frankly, I hope both of them stay. for the long term. Because if we can get three or four more battles, more chess battles between those two, that sounds great.
Yeah.
Especially if Pete Golding doesn't have two freshmen and inside linebackers.
Well, and that's
in the future.
What a
novel concept that is, isn't it?
Yeah, I made a tweet. I feel like
Alabama, you did a tweet.
Yeah, I did a tweet. Alabama defense coordinators, Pete Golding, in comparison to the Kirby Smarts and the Jeremy Pruitts, he's had to deal with more this season than any of those guys. When you're talking about A, and this is what my tweet was referring to, a lot of people thought that I made the tweet originally to say this is why Alabama lost to LSU and if these things wouldn't have happened.
I saw this, yeah.
It was a response to fans wondering why Alabama's defense is struggling this season. That's it. There's no excuses involved. But when you talk about your typical turnover, Christian Miller, Isaiah Bugs, depth players like Jamie Mosley, Keaton Anderson decided to hang up the pads a year, I think, before he had to, and just give up football. But he was a key special teams contributor, played some on defense. Guys like that, that's expected turnover. Coaching staff knew that was coming. You have a incredible rise over the course of the season from a guy like Quinnen Williams. The coaching staff did not see that coming. They thought they were going to have him for at least a year after. He was a redshirt sophomore last year. That was unexpected, but they at least had the season to start getting an idea. Okay, this guy's been so good, he's probably going to leave. They did not. I think Nick Saban and the coaching staff was pretty blindsided when both Deontay Thompson and Mack Wilson left.
I wasn't as blindsided when Deontay left, but that's just my opinion, not theirs.
Definitely. Now, granted, Nick Saban had said he felt like he should come back for a year, and the way that he played down the stretch, to be fair, both those guys were projected to be day one or early day two picks at the time. So you can't necessarily, people are just like, it was so selfish of Mack Wilson to leave. He sacrificed potentially, you know, based off of where he was being projected to go. So he was given wrong information, but he thought he was going late day one, early day two. The best he could stand to gain is he was an off-ball linebacker. He wasn't going to go top five. You know, best he could have helped himself 10 or in his mind.
Yeah.
It didn't end up being that case. Deontay Thompson's fall was more of a result of that degenerative knee issue.
Yes.
That scared a lot of NFL teams away. But that is two guys, a rangy safety and a excellent coverage linebacker with great situational awareness. You watched that LSU game last year against Joe Burrow, who was a very different Joe Burrow, but still. Do you not think that he would a guy like Mack Wilson, his short intermediate coverage ability, his situational awareness, his ball skills, wouldn't have made a difference against Joe Burrow and what they were able to do successfully?
Mack Wilson absolutely makes a difference on this defense.
Absolutely.
And to make no mention of the injuries and everything
else.
And
that's the part that also, so they had a couple of guys that they weren't expecting to leave depart. Now you're left kind of scrambling. Oh, wow. Kind of thought we were going to have those guys back. Normal progression of development. And then you lose your other inside linebacker, a guy that can get sideline to sideline, one of the fastest sideline to
sideline. The other two, Moses and McMillan. I know you're talking about Moses specifically at the moment,
yes.
But you lose two.
The guy that was supposed to replace Mack Wilson, starting next to Dylan Moses, you lose him as well.
Yes.
So now you're down three inside linebackers.
You're also down LeBryan Ray at the moment.
Who was expected to be your top interior pass rusher. Raekwon, a lot of people thought he was going to have a much better season from that standpoint. But LeBryan Ray was supposed to be that guy to replace the interior pass rush production left behind by Quinnen Williams. So that's not there. You haven't had really too much of an interior presence. Christian Barmore, the argument can be made. But it's been mostly exterior pressure, which is the exact opposite of what we saw down the stretch last year from Alabama's defense, where they couldn't get extra pressure because guys like Terrell Lewis and Christian Miller missed the national championship.
Yes.
Anyways, point being, I don't think that he has done a terrible job, Pete Golding.
In all of this, ESPN's SP Plus, done by Bill Connolly, it is tempo adjusted and opponent adjusted, a measure of efficiency. Alabama's defense is 12th.
Wow.
In all of this. And all of the attrition to the draft and all of the injuries, it's opponent adjusted. You got to remember that.
Yeah.
So it takes into account that New Mexico State and Southern Miss and Tennessee and Arkansas are bad. It takes all that into account. 12th.
That is incredible.
12th.
That is the stat to look at right there. That's actually really incredible. I'm kind of blown away.
So, I mean, can we get off Pete Golding's back, please?
Yeah. And that's, I went a very long winded way of saying.
And now it needs to go back to the context that I said it and we both agreed. Joe Brady was a step ahead of Pete Golding.
Yes, he was.
For the entire game. Every snap of that game, Joe Brady was a step ahead of Pete Golding. That is a fact.
He was also a step ahead of Nick Saban, too.
Yep.
I mean, that's what people are choosing to
ignore. I was more here. Ooh, I might make hot take here. Ooh, I think I was more impressed with Joe Brady than I was with Joe Burrow.
I don't. Yeah. I mean, now, and this is something that I need to look more. Esminger compared to Brady. Who's exactly? I know it's kind of a dual
thing. Yeah, I think it's kind of a brain trust. But Joe Brady is the pass game coordinator.
Right. And so I think between the two, yes, absolutely.
I mean, the way I heard it described, I can't remember where this was, but I think there are times where Ensminger and Brady are lockstep to the point where they're thinking along the same lines most of the time. But when a key passing situation comes up,
it's Brady.
Ensminger turns to his left and says, "What you got?"
Yeah, and which makes a lot of sense. And
I think Stephen Godfrey said that. I want to make sure I give credit.
Well, I will say, I feel like that's really what has made the LSU coaching staff so effective is their ability to work in unison. They're all, you know, they trust each other very much so, which is tough to do. But for the fans that, you know, because a caller called into Jocks this morning, like I said, I love when I get a chance to listen to Jocks. I just very rarely get to do it.
Right.
But a fan called in talking about, you know, how terrible of a job Pete Golding did because Alabama couldn't tackle on defense. That is every bit as much of a reflection on Nick Saban as it is Pete Golding. Pete Golding isn't the only one taking them through tackling drills, teaching tackling techniques. Nick Saban works with the defensive backs specifically. So all this major criticism on Pete Golding and you're completely ignoring, I don't think that either one of them really deserve as much criticism as they're getting, but you can't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I need to tee off on this. I go to the media viewing practice period every single day, every Monday, every Tuesday, every Wednesday. I see tackling drills every single day. So if you genuinely believe that a Division I college football program is not working on tackling or doing tackling drills every single day, you should delete your Twitter account.
Absolutely.
Like, what are you doing? What do you think is going on?
Yeah.
They're on the practice field for two and a half hours every single day. What do you think they're doing?
7-on-7. 2-on-7.
7-on-7 screwing with each other's helmets and leg pads? No. There's tackling drills.
Definitely.
What do you expect?
Definitely. I completely agree.
What do you think's going on the practice field?
And
like, get out of here. That's ridiculous.
Now, you could make the argument potentially that the style and techniques that they're teaching is what was leading to as many missed tackles as there were. And yeah, sure. But at the same time, Nick Saban and Pete Golding, who is learning under Nick Saban, who kind of is that's his boss. This defensively, it's still Nick Saban's defense at the end of the day. You think he's teaching tackling techniques any different than he was 5 or 6 years ago when Alabama had the number one defense? You think he decided to randomly switch that up?
Another great point.
I mean, to me, it's just baffling. It's just LSU had guys that made guys miss tackles.
It's almost as if LSU has really good football players.
Bingo.
It is almost as if they have really good football players. Isn't that insane?
Bingo.
Another thing that strikes me as funny, when Bama's receivers are running roughshod over every defense they faced, nobody's criticizing the tackling on that other defensive unit, are they?
No.
Yeah. It's because Bama's got good players.
Great, great point.
But when the same thing happens on the flip side, it's not because the other guy's got good players.
Yeah.
It's weird how that works out, isn't it?
Yes, we have very much and that's...
It's funny.
That's perfect. I mean, that's a perfect way to put it, because sometimes... And I get it. It was frustrating. These are people that are taking out their frustrations, but they're just aiming it in the wrong direction. Now, granted, I don't really know where to point that, you know... I don't know who to place the blame on. Sometimes a team's just better than you. And now, granted, like I said, I think that the reason that LSU was up 20 points at any point in that game was because of a lot of self-inflicted stuff. But I do feel like for 4 quarters, LSU proved on that particular night that they were the better football team.
Yeah.
So, And what's a major reason for that? Freaking Joe Burrow. That guy was phenomenal. And I still don't think he's getting enough credit. I've continued to say that since the game ended. He's getting a lot of praise. But what he was able to do, it was one of the top quarterback performances versus an Alabama defense that I've ever seen. 31 of 39 for 393 yards and three scores to go along with 64 yards rushing. By the way, that's 64 yards rushing when he was sacked, what, four or five times? He was able to extend plays, whether it be in the pocket. He was able to get outside the pocket. QB draws. He was effective with his legs.
I think the sacks cost him like 37 yards to get to your point.
Yeah. So, I mean, that would have put him over 100 right there on top. So he had
I'll double check that while you finish
close
your point.
To 500 total yards versus an Alabama defense, which people think, oh, you know, Alabama's defense is down, but it's not, you know, a terrible defense. It's a mediocre defense. Mm-hmm. So it was still an impressive performance. Now, I think the biggest thing from that game, Alabama couldn't weather the storm, and they had to have expected that Joe Burrow, with his ability to create and chaos, was going to find some success against their defense. You could have guys right in his face, and he's still going to deliver a few money throws and make some plays. It's managing that. It's moving on to the next play. And I feel like that is the aspect that Alabama didn't do a great job of.
Yeah, you could make that argument. It was 37 yards that Joe Burrow took in sacks, by the way. I said I would double-check that.
101 rushing yards to go along with 393 passing yards that would have been, you know, 494. I mean, and... So,
I think I can wrap up this conversation by going back to a Nick Saban quote on tackling from earlier in the season. And we do need to touch on Mississippi State for like a brief second after
this.
Yes, we do. So, this was from, I can't remember the exact date. It was earlier in the season. Nick Saban was asked about practicing tackling in this day and age with the awareness we have for the dangers of repeatedly practicing contact and all the dangers that come with that, et cetera, et cetera. Here's his quote, and it's transcribed to a T, so there's going to be a lot of I's in here, just a warning. Yeah, I think that I don't see everybody, but I know that I'm really on our players on our team because I think we missed far too many tackles in the last two games. Again, I don't remember when this quote was given. And I think it comes down to the way you practice. Now, I'm not complaining about the way we have to practice, because I think you can still practice tackling, if you do it the right way without putting yourself at the risk of injury, without anybody getting on the ground, He was fired up this day. But you have to put yourself in position to tackle a guy every time you get an opportunity. And if you're not willing to do that, then it's going to lead to poor tackling habits. So I'm not complaining about the way we need to practice in this day and age for player safety. And I don't think it's attributed to that. I think it's attributed to players doing the things in practice they need to do to put themselves in position to do it because they know they're not going to tackle the guy. So rather than doing that, they just run by and tag the guy. Well, they're not in position to tackle, so when they get in the game, they're not in position to tackle the guy. So we work really, really hard on that, and we've been harping on it really a lot this week. Again, I don't remember exactly what week this is. There's more to the quote, but I think the gist has been delivered here. Like, they work on tackling, and I think by kind of taking his quote in context, you can kind of gather they work on tackling more now just because they know they have to work on tackling in a different way.
Right.
In kind of reaction to what we know about contact.
Yes.
Now.
Yes. And that is another aspect of the game that has been shifted more towards big offense. People wonder, where's all these elite defenses gone? In practice, you don't have the same, and it's to protect the players. You don't want those guys being in their 40s and 50s falling apart, you know, from CTE type stuff, brain injury development over the last several years. As far as the way it affects people, it's, I mean, even down to the peewee level, it's affected things.
Yep.
So, all right. We've spent a lot of time harping on LSU and a lot of time harping on the college football playoffs. Alabama does have an opponent this week, and it is Western Carolina is not going to make a lick of difference. I don't care how good they play. It's not going to help them with the college football committee. It can hurt them if they don't play well versus Western Carolina, but it doesn't help them. Alabama's got two games left to prove that they're one of the top four teams in the country, in my opinion, and that's Mississippi State, granted, they're not a great team, unfortunately, but it's on the road. It's an SEC opponent. And then Auburn. And we'll talk about Auburn when Auburn comes. Mississippi State. You covered this team
I did.
Quite a while, so you know a little bit about these guys. We should talk about them for a minute.
I just don't have a handle for this team. It's hard, man. Like they have those suspensions they're working through where they have three. I would say three of their top seven or eight defensive players forced to miss eight games of the season due to an academic scandal of sorts, a Tutorgate, if you will. Not necessarily unlike what happened at Missouri. Different set of circumstances, obviously. No two situations are the same, but somewhat similar set of circumstances in terms of Tutor doing things they shouldn't be doing. So that's hurt this team all along, and they've had quarterback, I don't want to call them issues, but inconsistencies, I guess. Like, they got the grad transfer, Tommy Stevens, in from Penn State. He went through the quarterback battle with Keaton Thompson, who entered the transfer portal in late August for reasons that make zero sense. And now the freshman, Garrett Schrader, is awesome, and he's playing some. And they're kind of going back and forth between Garrett Schrader and Tommy Stevens when Tommy Stevens is healthy, which apparently he is at this point in time. So I don't really know what to expect of this unit on either side of the ball, because the offense hasn't really been given an opportunity to settle into itself, and it's hard for the defense to gain identity when it is losing and regaining such talented players like Willie Gay and Marcus Murphy on an inconsistent basis. So it's been a very unfortunate season for Mississippi State in that regard. It's been kind of a cursed season for them, and it's definitely paused the trajectory of the Joe Moorhead era there, because Joe, again, these are things I know from having covered the program and covered Joe specifically. Like, Joe knows what he's doing. Joe has a good plan. He's an intelligent person. His offense is very intelligent and will work if given the opportunity. But some of the environmental factors there within this season have been too much to conquer for a team that is always going to be in the margins of the SEC when it comes to talent acquisition, right? Like, and I'm not telling anybody who follows recruiting anything they don't know, but just look at the history. Like, the access to talent at places like Bama, Georgia, Auburn, LSU, Florida, etc., even Texas A&M, mm-hmm. It's significantly greater than it is at Mississippi State. So there's a lot of living in the margins or doing the extra things, or as Joe Moorhead says, you don't have to do extraordinary things, you have to do ordinary things extraordinarily. There's always going to be a little bit of that is required at Mississippi State, and they very much embrace that from the very top in athletic director John Cohen all the way down. They embrace that mentality and ideology as a athletic program, and the particulars of this Mississippi State football season have made that borderline impossible for them. So I don't anticipate this being an issue for Alabama. Things to know about Mississippi State that I haven't already discussed: the running back Kylan Hill is fantastic,
phenomenal.
He's amazing. They've got some talent on the offensive line. So watch them, and Kylan Hill is just awesome.
13th in the country in rushing yards, first in the SEC. He's already got over 1,027. Nine touchdowns, averaging 5.84 yards per carry.
They're awesome. And Bob Shoup has a little bit of an aggressive streak to him, the Mississippi State's defensive coordinator, who I'm sure Bama fans know from his brief stint at the end of Butch Jones' era at Tennessee. There's a lot of symmetry there. That's strange, but there's something to watch in that regard. But like I said a few minutes ago, this Mississippi State season has been snake bit for several reasons, and I anticipate the game kind of reflecting that. Wasn't the spread 21?
Yes.
So seems about right.
It does. It going on the road, SEC team, and that granted.
And cowbells. Yeah. I didn't mention cowbells. I should have. Cowbells.
And you would hope. I thought Oklahoma was a safe bet last week against Iowa State, considering Oklahoma has to pass the eye test now that they've had a loss. They've got a – I thought they had to boat race everybody they played. Alabama's in the same boat now, so they only get a couple more chances to prove they're a playoff-worthy team. Do they take that out on Mississippi State and try to win by 40? You know, so I do think that 21, it seems like it should be about right. Wouldn't be surprised if Alabama covered, though. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Bama Beat Podcast. Yet again, we ran long, but you guys said you liked it.
But you approved it.
Yeah, so
we had the green light. If this were a wedding ceremony, we had to speak now or forever hold your peace portion of the ceremony. And I guess we'll open it up again if you want us to.
But, yeah, definitely.
Well, I mean, give it to us if you want, but you know.
Yeah,
you had your opportunity. You had your opportunity. So,
all right. So this has been the Bama Beat Podcast, brought to you by Zaxby's.
Get better, Georgia.
This episode of the Bama Beat Podcast has been brought to you by Zaxby's, taking chicken to a whole new level of flavor. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxby's.com/podcast. That's zaxby's.com/podcast.